The following is a class on the Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, chapter number 6, text number 38, given by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Dasathikari, recorded on June 4th, 2012, in Pretoria, South Africa.
Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. All glory and success to Srila Narada Muni, because he glorifies the activities of the personality of Godhead, and by so doing he himself takes pleasure and also enlivens all the distressed souls of the universe. Purport. Srila Narada Muni plays on his instrument to glorify the transcendental activities of the Lord and to give relief to all miserable living entities of the universe. No one is happy here within the universe, and what is felt as happiness is Maya's illusion. The illusory energy of the Lord is so strong that even a hog who lives on filthy stool feels happy. No one can be truly happy within the material world. Srila Narada Muni, in order to enlighten the miserable inhabitants, wanders everywhere. His mission is to get them back home, back to Godhead. That is the mission of all genuine devotees of the Lord, following in the footsteps of that great sage. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports of the first canto, sixth chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Conversation Between Narada and Vyasadeva.
Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Jata Parakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Ragana Tanvitam Sajivam Sadaitam Savadutam Bhadijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shivishakan Vitamscha.
As I was reading this purport, I was awestruck by the magnificent, munificent potency of His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Especially this last sentence, I was going, this is really, really something. This is one of the rarest, most choicest gems, this last sentence. He's describing how Narada Muni is completely happy in his glorification of the Lord, and how he's wandering everywhere to enlighten the miserable inhabitants of this universe. And then, hit with a mission of delivering everyone back to God. And then Prabhupada says, this is the mission of all genuine devotees of the Lord, following in the footsteps of that great sage. So, my question is this. Are we supposed to be genuine devotees of the Lord or not? What do you think? Are we supposed to be genuine devotees of the Lord? Of course. Yes, Prabhupada is training us to be genuine devotees of the Lord. Therefore, that's our mission. If I'm actually a genuine devotee of the Lord, then my mission is to deliver everyone back to home, back to Godhead. In other words, if I'm a genuine devotee of the Lord, I'm not just thinking about my own comforts, eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. Those are not very important for me, although they're covered. You see, I take prasadam, I take rest. You see, they're covered. But if I'm actually a genuine devotee of the Lord, then my main thought is, what can I do to deliver all the fallen souls of this universe? You see, that's the meditation of a genuine devotee. How can I live my life in such a way that with my every thought, my every word, and my every deed, I'm actually pushing for this Krishna consciousness movement at every minute. Do you understand this point? At every minute, how can I be pushing for this movement for the benefit of the fallen souls of this age? In other words, this is called being a missionary. Every genuine devotee is a missionary. If he's not, he's called a Kanishta Adhikari, a materialistic devotee. He's simply thinking of his own eatings, his own comforts. To hell with everybody else. I want to be saved, but I don't care about anybody else, you see. That's called Kanishta Adhikari. Such a devotee can't really be happy because he's selfish. If you're selfish, you can't be happy. I mean, try it. Try to be selfish and see if you're happy. No one can be happy by being selfish. I like the English language in this particular case because a person who is very selfish, what is he called? A miser. And note the connection between the word miser and the word miserable. So as Prabhupada would always say, this means this. Prabhupada could say, miser means miserable. So the more you're a miser, just thinking of your own comforts, your own satisfaction, your own sense enjoyment, the more that you're a miser, I can guarantee you, Prabhus and Matajis, I guarantee you, you'll be miserable. And the less you can be miserly, in other words, on the one end there's miser, on the other end there's missionary, you see. The more you can be a missionary, as opposed to being a miser, you're going to taste the bliss, as Narada Muni is, the same bliss that Narada Muni is tasting. You will taste that same bliss. And believe me, that bliss is absolutely inconceivable. The bliss of Narada Muni. We can't even begin to conceive of that unlimited ocean of bliss being tasted by Srila Narada Muni at every minute. We can't even begin to conceive of it. It's achincha, inconceivable. But at least we can hanker for a few drops. At least we can get a few drops of that mercy. By taking up the spirit of a missionary, one who is not living for himself only, but who is living for the happiness of every single jiva soul within this entire universe. Even the little ant, or the grasshopper, or the blade of grass. A devotee is compassionate upon every single living entity. You understand this? Prabhupada elaborates on this point, not only here in this purport, but in other places as well. In the Bhagavatam purport, another place, he very wonderfully states, the devotee, the Krishna conscious being, yes, that's how he states it. Here he says, genuine devotee. In that purport, he says, the Krishna conscious being. It's the same thing. If you're a genuine devotee, you're a Krishna conscious being. A Krishna conscious being is always thinking, planning how to deliver all living entities of this world back to home, back to Godhead. And even if he is not successful in doing so, his perfection is guaranteed. And anybody who follows him will also achieve perfection. So you can't lose by being a missionary. Say, well, I don't want to be a missionary. I don't want to dedicate my life to delivering all the falls and fallen souls of this universe because, you know, it's impossible and I'd certainly be frustrated. Better not even think about it, you know. Just listen to some music and take some prasadam and not worry about it anymore. No, don't cheat yourself. Don't cheat yourself out of the bliss of Narada Muni taste by just thinking of your own self. You take up this mood of a missionary, because even if, Prabhupada says, even if you're not successful in delivering everyone, at least you're going to be saved. You understand? At least you'll save yourself. It's like, you know, there's this saying, if you want to shoot for the stars, then at least you'll clear the fence. You know? You have a little homemade airplane, you're trying to take off for the stars, your homemade airplane from your backyard. Think, well, if you just try to clear the fence, you'll crash into the fence, you see. But if you shoot for those stars, at least you'll clear the fence. So therefore, shoot for the stars, Prabhu. Shoot for the stars, Mataji. Dedicate your life for delivering all of the fallen conditioned souls of this universe back to home, back to God. And dedicate your life for them. And at least you'll be saved. And anybody who can make a devotee is inspired by you, they'll be saved by your example, you see. So, be a spiritual revolutionary, you see. You're sitting in the most opportune moment in the history of the universe to be a spiritual revolutionary. Whether you're male body or female body, it doesn't matter. White body, black body, it doesn't matter. You are sitting now at the most opportune moment in the history of the universe to become a powerful spiritual revolutionary. The Supreme Personality of Godhead has just recently appeared, only 500 years ago. That's nothing compared to the history of the universe. It's practically yesterday Lord Chaitanya was walking on this planet. And one of his greatest devotees, who's one of his eternal associates from the spiritual world, namely Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, has made a very interesting statement in the Chaitanya Charitamrita about this movement of Lord Chaitanya. He says, such janna durjana pandu jadda anagana premadvan yaya dubaila jagatera jana. This Krishna consciousness movement, it is a prema tsunami. And it will inundate the entire universe, drowning everyone, whether they are lame, invalid, blind, pious or impious. Everybody is going to drown in this tidal wave of prema, you see. So we've got a really powerful prediction on our side. If we want to take up this missionary mood, we're not going to be frustrated, because it's guaranteed this movement will indeed inundate the entire world. Now, how soon it will happen? Well, that depends on us. How pure we become, you see. One pure devotee can personally deliver the whole universe. How quickly it happens, that's up to us. How pure we become. How much we take shot of the name. How much we develop pure relationships with Vaishnavas. How much we are surrendered with love to our Guru Maharaj, you see. These things will determine how potent missionaries we are to actually bring about the transformation as soon as possible in the human society. It is stated directly in Bhagavad Gita chapter 3. You can look it up when you have time. Text 21. Yad yad atarite shrestas tattare vetarojana sayad pramanam kurute lokas tad anivartate. Whatever a great man does, the common people follow in his footsteps. Whatever standard he sets by exemplary acts, all the world pursues. This statement applies materially and spiritually. When Prabhupada met the Beatles, he told them that they were great men. And whatever they did, the world would follow. And it's true. And the Beatles grew their hair, we grew our hair. We were all long-haired hippies, you know. The Beatles grew their hair, we grew our hair, you see. They had a big impact on the youth, the Beatles, you see. But it's even more powerful with a great spiritualist, you see. One who becomes a great devotee, fully absorbed in pure bhakti 24 hours a day. And can you do it? Sure you can. You can become a great devotee. You can become a pure devotee. You just have to desire it. All you have to do is desire pure bhakti. Instead of just thinking, where can I get my prasadam? Where can I get a place to sleep? How can I get my house order? How can I get my livelihood, my money? Instead of just thinking about these things, which is just temporary anyway, do them, they're going to be there anyway. Why not focus on what should be your real meditation? How can I become a pure devotee of Krishna? So that I can be the most potent possible person for helping other people. What is that statement of Prabhupada? Physician, heal thyself. You want to help people become Krishna conscious? Well, I can give you a person right now that you need to help. That's yourself. You need help, Prabhu. And you need help, Mataji. You see? You need to help yourself. Prabhupada also quoted that famous saying, God helps those who help themselves. In his Bhagavad Gita purport. You know that story? The little sparrow? Everybody knows about the little sparrow? You know the little sparrow? You don't? All right, I'll tell that story. It's one of my favorite stories. The little sparrow. You see? This little sparrow, she laid her eggs, and you know the mother is very attached to her eggs by nature. That's how the eggs get protected. The mother is psychologically wired to be very protective of her young. So the mother laid the eggs, and that rascal ocean sucked and pulled them away with its waves and stole the eggs, you see. So this little sparrow, she was completely distraught, completely devastated, emotionally devastated. She requested the ocean to return the eggs, and the ocean flatly refused. No way, you're not getting those eggs back. He was torturing her. He was some kind of in a sadistic mood that day, you see, torturing the little bird. No, you're not getting. You're not going to give them back. So the little sparrow, she was very determined. Oh, I will dry you up then, you nonsense ocean. I will dry you up. You just see. I will take you one drop at a time. I will deposit you on the land, and this way I will dry you up. So she began her little campaign, running down to the water, taking some one or two drops, three drops maybe, running back to the land, depositing here, going back down, some more drops, and this way back and forth. Everybody's looking at this spectacle. Just see this stupid little bird. She's going to run herself to death. Ha, 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 ha. You see? Well, the birds are a species of life. You know, the group is a whole group of one of the categories of the 8,400,000 species. What is it? Jalaja Navalakshani Stavadalakshajangshadi Kramaya Rujasangapakra. What is the Sanskrit? I don't remember. For birds? Is that Pakshinam?
Huh?
Pakshinam, yeah. Pakshinam dashalakshanam. They're described in the Vishnu Purana. There's 10 million varieties of birds. But of all the birds, there is one very, very big super bird. And his name is Goduda. You see? So when the king of the birds heard what was happening to his little sister, he wasn't very pleased. In fact, he was quite disturbed about it. They're torturing my little sister. The ocean is torturing my little sister. He became very, very, very enraged, and he came swooping in. They even have an airline named after him, Garuda Airlines. And Garuda came swooping in to check out what was going on with this ocean. He told the ocean, he said, you better give those eggs back right now, ocean, or I'm going to dry you up by a mystic power. And the ocean knew he'd met his match. You know, Garuda, he's the personal Vishnu, carrier of Lord Vishnu. He knew, I've met my match now. And he gave the eggs back immediately. Rather than he knew he could be dried up by Garuda's anger, you see. So what is the moral of the story? Prabhupada said, God helps those who help themselves. So be that little sparrow, you see. Even it seems impossible that you could conquer your lust, your anger, your greed, your madness, your illusion, your envy, your laziness, all the bad qualities we have. It seems impossible, isn't it, that we can overcome all these bad qualities that we've been carrying with us for millions of births in this material existence. It sometimes seems hopeless. Man, I'm so lusty, I'm so greedy, get angry all the time. How can I ever get over this stuff? But actually, you just take the mood of a little sparrow, you see. Even one drop at a time. You know, vigorously, even one drop at a time, I'm going to fight this Maya. I'm going to fight Maya, Devi. I don't care how much she tries to divert me away, I'm going to fight back, you see. And then what will happen, just as Garuda came, you see, Krishna will send you a spiritual master who can empower you, you see, to conquer your senses. Krishna will come as Lord Chaitanya. He will come, he will send Srila Prabhupada. He will give you a whole army to help you. A whole army of great Vaishnava acharyas will be there to help you, you see, to actually become a pure devotee. You just have to make that determination. And the more you become pure, you see, to that extent, you will have shakti for pushing forward this movement. Krishna shakti vine nahi tara pravartana. Unless one has Krishna Shakti, he can't push forward this movement. It's stated in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So, how do you get Krishna Shakti? By surrender. The more you surrender to Krishna, the more you become empowered by Krishna. Krishna wants to give you full empowerment. Krishna wants you to give you full empowerment that you can personally deliver the entire universe. But you have to surrender. You have to surrender to Krishna. You see? Because inasmuch as they surrender, to that extent I reward them. So don't expect to become a big, big, empowered Vaishnava preacher if you don't surrender. If you hold on to your lust, your anger, your greed. I asked Prabhupada about it one time. Because I had this desire to be a successful preacher. I asked Prabhupada about it one time. He said, "No," he told me, "no jnana, no karma, no yoga, all material desire is zero. Then you can think big preacher." Is it? So you really have to work on it. Well, when can I work on it? Well, every day you got your japa, don't you? That's called soul therapy time. That's your soul therapy. Today I'm doing my... Am I doing my soul therapy today, you see? Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama. Krishna has personally come in the form of His name to bless me with His divine presence. And by the power of His divine presence, I become purified, you see. I become Krishnized. I become spiritually saturated, you see. So this process is very effective. If you will pursue it with all due diligence, then you'll become a great propagator of Krishna consciousness, just as Srila Narada Muni is at this very moment, delivering fallen souls all over the universe. You can also do the same thing as Narada Muni. You simply have to remember this great sage and follow very carefully in his footsteps by every day chanting 16 rounds without fail, strictly following the regulated principles, no illicit sex, no meat eating, no intoxication, gambling, by reading Prabhupada's books as much as possible, by distributing Prabhupada's books as much as possible, by chanting Hare Krishna as much as possible, and by preaching as much as possible to yourself, to others, and to the world at large. So I can ask now if there's any questions. Yes, Mataji.
Maharaj, the word missionary has many connotations, that you're a person who is self-righteous and you want to project your worldview on others, you know, who may be happily living in another culture. That can be the impression of missionary.
The normal impression that people have of missionaries is a holier-than-thou Bible basher.
Yeah, sure.
So what's the question? How to avoid, how to be a missionary without coming across like a Bible basher? Is that what you're asking?
Well, yeah, a few days ago, he was also asking in class that people are, we may think of them as bewildered or in Maya, but they're going about their business and they're satisfied in that. And... you know, we're coming to, you know, rouse them up.
Yeah.
So people will object, you know, what is your right?
What is your right to approach us? It's like the little kid who was flying his kite and on the top of the roof, and he was so absorbed in his kite he didn't realize he's about ready to walk off the edge of the roof and kill himself. And somebody yelled out, "Little boy, what are you doing? Stop!" And his first reaction was, "Who is this rascal interrupting my kite-flying bliss?" You see? "Who is this rascal nonsense? You know, why is he disturbing me? I'm in bliss." You see? So devotee is like that. They're actually on the verge of falling down to the animal species. And we're just trying to save them, that's all. So, I don't know what the question is, though, but... Is there a question?
Well, just many people feel a bit negative about proselytizing, missionary things, the word preaching, and...
what is the question?
Say people who are becoming involved in ISKCON and Bhakti Yoga, that may be part of our movement that they don't feel comfortable with.
Yeah.
So how can we help them?
How to be a missionary... The real question is how to be a successful missionary. How to be successful in actually attracting people to Krishna consciousness and not repelling them. Maybe that's your question. Huh?
Yes.
How do you actually successfully attract people to Krishna consciousness? Well, the real secret is, we see in Prabhupada himself, the more we are attracted to Krishna, the more people will be attracted to hear from us. You see, so it really boils down to our own Krishna consciousness. The more that one is Krishna conscious, he becomes more Krishnaized, which means he becomes more attractive himself. But there are many practical tips also. I mean, spiritual purity is the first principle, but there's also many practical tips. Just like a salesman, how does one become a successful salesman? People have to be willing to hear from you. If no one's willing to hear from you, you're going to get nowhere. So a preacher, just like a salesman, he has to relate with people in such a way that they will hear from him. So who are we willing to hear from? You see, if I don't like somebody, will I want to hear from him? No way. Get out of me, you know. Don't bore me. Don't bother me. Get away. I don't want to hear from you. If you don't like somebody, you're not going to want to hear from them. So if somebody is going to hear from either a salesman or a preacher, that person has to like the salesman or the preacher. So how do you get somebody to like you? Okay, sir, you have to like me now because you have to hear about Krishna, so therefore you have to like me. No, that doesn't work, obviously. So how do you get somebody to like you? So they're willing to hear from you. Just think about it yourself. If somebody doesn't like you, do you like them? No way. A great transcendentalist may be able to, but you know, in normal life, we don't like somebody who doesn't like us. Is it? So how do you get somebody to like you? Well, you have to like them first. If you really feel that I like you, I care about you, you're very dear to me, you see, then, unless you're just a complete, absolute rakshasa, you know, save the question. So I appreciate your question, but I'm finished answering this one first. The practical thing is you have to deal with such a person in such a humble, sweet, wonderful way, showing that the real thing is you have to actually like that person. If you walk up to somebody in the street and you hate their guts, so this is a karmi, you're going to get nowhere. You can't preach. But if you actually see here's a spirit soul part and parcel of Krishna, and you feel compassion for that person, you feel a genuine desire, not that you're trying to convert them so you can add to your score list, you know, you see, that I'm a great preacher. No. But you have a genuine feeling, I want to serve this person, I want to help this person. You feel love for this person, you see. That's the person who can be a successful missionary. They actually are very happy to meet such a person. This is my own experience in coming to Krishna consciousness. What you're saying is like what I felt the first devotees I met in California. It was like, whoa. You know, I had chanted Hare Krishna. Some karmi friend introduced me to it, and I loved the mantra. And I had read the Gita. I didn't really fully understand it yet, but I was attracted to the Gita. I was even offering my food. When I met the devotees, I said, no way, this is like the boot camp. I don't know if you have, in the U.S. it's boot camp in the military, you know, and you go to boot camp first, very heavy training. This is like boot camp, you know, these guys are like boot campers. Join the military now, boy. There's no way, you know. I was really turned, I respected them, but I didn't want to get too close. I respected them, but I thought they were a little fanatical, a little weird, like them. That's the way I felt about the devotees. Until I met in Austin, Texas, a few months later, His Holiness Vishnujana Swami. And he had a whole different mood. His mood was, you know, just sharing the bliss. his mood was like a festival. It wasn't like somebody beating you over the head with a Bhagavad Gita. It was a festive mood. He went to the... he was so attractive and sweet. He just went to this place where all the youth, the hippies were hanging out. He just stood there and started chanting with his hands. He sang so beautifully, with so much feeling, that people were immediately attracted to him. In other words, he was just emanating bhakti bliss, and people were attracted by that. So, if you would really want to be successful as a missionary, then you have to be just, emanating the bliss of Krishna consciousness. You have to really taste it yourself. You have to have good sadhana so you're really tasting the bliss. And you're just like a volcano of bhakti, you see. That's what Vishnu Swami is like. He's like a bhakti volcano. You just get this lava, this bliss lava, but you just come near him and you felt like you had lava bliss flowing all over you. It was just amazing. He would announce on the campus, "Invite me to your home tonight and I will turn your home into a temple." Every night every day he would distribute BTGs for 25 cents apiece, and then he would save that money, and in the afternoon he'd go to the grocery store, he'd buy some boga, he'd cook a feast, and every night he'd have the most amazing program with kirtan and lecture and prasadam at somebody's house, from house to house to house. He had a little floating Nama Hut program there. He had no vehicle, he had no money, but he had great faith in Prabhupada. And within a month, he had a building filled up with devotees. He was so potent. And everybody was just attracted to him. He was like the Pied Piper dancing into Austin. We were like little kids following along the Pied Piper, you see. So that was my experience. I can understand exactly what you're talking about, because the first devotees I met, I respected them, but they turned me off. They were presenting to me, "Come join the International Society for Rules and Regulations." That was the feeling I got from them, you see. "Okay, boy, now here's the rules." I remember when I walked into the temple, the first thing I got was two rules. I went to the first temple was 26 Second Avenue. The second temple was 518 Frederick. I walked into the second temple of ISKCON it opened in 1967. I went there in 68 and walked into 518 Frederick. The first thing I got, first thing I learned was two rules. Leave your shoes at the door and don't put the book on the floor. Two rules, you see. But when I met Vishnujana Swami, it wasn't like rules. It was bliss, nectar. It was mystical. He talked about the meaning of avatar. I mean, everything about him was just so amazing. So we have to, and Prabhupada personally, Prabhupada wrote, he said, because Vishnujana Swami is personally a very, very nice devotee. He makes very nice devotees. So you have to just be a nice person, really. Be the nicest person you could ever imagine, you see. If you want to be an effective preacher or missionary, you have to be a very nice person. Like Prabhupada is the most charming, nice person you could ever expect to meet in your entire life, you see. So you have to be a very nice person, very kind, very friendly, very much hearing what the other person has to say. Not just, shut up and let me fill your ears with Krishna Gita. Not that kind of approach. You really care about the person. You want to hear about the person. People feel, "Hey, this person loves me very much. They have compassion for me as a human being." You see, if you have that kind of a mood, then one will be very successful in doing his duty to be a missionary, you see. Very successful. Now, his hand up is up first. But is it tied to this? Okay, go ahead.
What you said is all very true. But at the same time, the person is the person you're talking to has to be ready for receiving.
But you can help them be ready for receiving.
It's not so easy because we are aggressors.
Huh?
Because we are aggressors. Like Prabhupada told that lady.
Mula Prakriti Devi
does. Not Mula
Someone
Prakriti
else?
Devi does. See, there is one lady who said to Prabhupada, why didn't
Lynn
you
Ludwig.
Come earlier?
Oh, why didn't you come earlier, that
earlier.
One?
Why you came so late?
Because you weren't ready.
Because you weren't ready.
Yeah. The thing is, also in preaching, it's we shouldn't waste our energy and people aren't ready to hear about Krishna. That's another very important point. Who's going to catch more fish? Somebody who's, you know, who's very determined, he's standing there, you know, I got to catch a fish. He's got his fishing pole. The fish comes and he just pulls really hard, you know, got to catch the fish, and then it doesn't work. That rips the hook out of the fish's mouth. He's, I got to get a fish. He's trying so hard with his one little fishing pole. Or somebody who throws a big net, about a mile wide net, you see, and he pulls in and he gets hundreds of fish, you see. So that's another principle of preaching is instead of just trying to put all your energy, I got to make this person take a book, or I have to make this person become a devotee. That's not how it works. You have to throw a wide net. You have to have a very nice program where you can contact a lot of people and be very wonderfully sweet to a lot of people. A lot of people feel this is a very nice person. And then out of that, there'll be a small fraction who are actually very interested. You have people, you see, there's three modes acting, the sattvagun, rajagun, tamagun. The tamagunis, they're so spaced out, they don't know what you're talking about. The rajagunis, they want money, sweeter than honey, you see. But there are those people who are sattvic, who are out there looking for higher knowledge. You see, when they meet a devotee, they're going to be very interested. But we have to, when we do encounter such a person, then we have to be as a humble servant, not get too excited and carried away by, oh, I'm going to make a devotee now. Not like that. Just help that person to get the seed of bhakti in their heart by understanding who is Krishna, what is the nature of the self in this way. So you had a question back there?
My question is, every devotee in the world is a good missionary, then that means we will attract everyone, we will attract the world to Krishna consciousness, right? So that means the world would wear the orange robe, you know, shave the head. So my question is that the vision that Krishna has for the world?
First of all, the Vedic society, not everybody wears an orange robe. You see, they're brahmacharis, grahasthas, vanaprasas, and sannyasis. Krishna's vision for the world is that everyone should be Krishna conscious and come back to home, back to God. That's his desire. That everyone should become Krishna. That's why he has come as Lord Chaitanya. His movement is predicted to actually inundate the entire world. So his vision that everyone should become Krishna conscious. Actually, this is an interesting question. Because the old days in ISKCON, we were thinking, you know, everybody has to join the temple, you know. If you don't live in the temple, you're in Maya. That was the early mood in the old days. But then in those days, Prabhupada said, someday you'll be able to walk down the street and everybody ringing the RT bell in their home, you see. So our vision for a world society is not that everybody is living in the temples. Our vision is that everybody will turn their home into a temple, you see. People will go on as a businessman, as a politician, a doctor, a dentist. They'll continue with their normal occupation. But they'll have an altar in their home. They'll be Krishna conscious. That's our vision. There'll be no more. The slaughterhouses will be closed down, the liquor shops, the tobacco industry. People won't waste their time on these things. Instead of growing tobacco, why not grow food and feed hungry people, you see? Prabhupada's vision, he says, Vedic society means everybody is well fed, even the animals. Everybody, Prabhupada said, everybody is happy, even the animals and the plants are happy in a Vedic society. Our vision of a Vedic society is Maharaj Yudhisthira's reign, you see. During that time, in a Vedic society, there's not even excessive heat and cold. Because if there's excessive heat and cold, the citizens can blame the king. It's your fault. It's too cold. It's too hot. It's your fault. If there's excessive heat or cold or floods or drought, it's your fault. It's your bad administration. Therefore, there is flood, there is drought, there's excessive heat, there's excessive cold, because of your misadministration, you see. Vedic culture means the king, the president, the prime minister, whatever sort of system of government is there, the management is going on so nicely according to Vedic principles. You don't have any drought, you don't have any flooding, you don't have all these diseases running rampant everywhere, you don't have terrorism. All of these things are symptoms of bad government, which ultimately are our fault because we elect these people into power. It's our own stupidity. As a human society, we elect these rascal leaders, and then we cry about bad administration. But we're electing them. We need to educate the electorate. We need to distribute these books to everybody. We need to educate everybody in the science of bhakti, so they're not going to vote for such leaders anymore. In the Vedic culture, you have the society going on in all aspects. You have drama, you have poetry, you have literature, you have architecture, you have fashion. Everything is there in a Vedic culture. But it's all centered on Krishna. Isha Vasham, it's a God-centered culture. You don't shut down the society. You still have military even. In the Vedic culture, you have very strong military force. The Kshatriyas are very, very powerful. They had all mystical weapons. They're much more powerful than our soldiers nowadays. Their weapons were thousands and millions of times more powerful than our atomic weapons even. You had everything in the Vedic culture. Nothing was lacking. But because it's centered on Krishna or God, therefore everyone is happy. So that's our vision for a world society. And we have to do whatever we can to push, to nudge the human society in that direction by giving them, letting them hear the Harinam, letting them read the books, letting them taste Prasadam, by, you know, helping people to understand what is the truth of these teachings of Prabhupada. And then at least we can plant a seed so that future generations that become fully manifest. It seems impossible it could happen now. Of course, we can always hope for a miracle. But to see the whole world become Krishna conscious when our lifetime seems very remote, seems quite impossible. It seems like absolutely impossible. But you never know what can happen. If we're very pure in our attempts to bring about a change in the human society. I mean, even here, who thought that Nelson Mandela could be successful years ago, you know? In bringing down apartheid, it was inconceivable it could ever happen. Completely inconceivable. But it happened, you see. So there's another type of apartheid going on in this world, on this planet right now. It's called bodily consciousness. That's another type of apartheid. Bodily consciousness. So it seems impossible that this bodily consciousness apartheid could ever come down. But just as Nelson Mandela was successful in bringing down apartheid, so this bodily apartheid can also come down. You never know. He never gave up. Even those years in prison, he never gave up determination, you see. He never gave up his determination, even though he was so much tortured and, you know, tormented by the apartheid government. He never gave up his determination. I will die, that's all right, but I'm never giving up my determination to bring down this rascal apartheid, you see. I don't care if I die, but I'll never give up my determination. So a devotee has the same determination like Nelson Mandela, you see. Then my life is dedicated to bringing down this rascal, demoniac culture which is based on sense gratification. I made be successful, I may not be, but I will die with that determination sitting in my heart. If it doesn't happen, whether it happens or not, I'm gonna keep that determination in my heart that I'm living here for this purpose. As Prabhupada says, the mission of all the devotees is to bring the fallen souls back home, back to Godhead. So we may see, we should have that determination like Nelson Mandela did, you see, to give them Krishna consciousness. They don't want it. They didn't want Nelson Mandela's message either. Get in the prison, rascal. We don't want your message. Get in the prison, you see. Stay in the prison. We don't want to hear from you. You just put you in the prison to keep you quiet. Keep you from... We want to muzzle you by putting you in the prison, you see. So they don't want to hear from us either now about Krishna consciousness. You're not the body, you see. They don't want to hear it. They're enjoying their body too much. They don't want to hear from us. And they've muzzled us in various ways. Just like the Supreme Court in the U.S., disallowed book distribution in the airports. The Supreme Court forbid us to distribute books and get donations for them, which we have to in order to distribute them. They say you can distribute them, but you can't ask for any money. That's what the Supreme Court ruled in the U.S. against the Hare Krishna movement. It was a case of the Hare Krishna movement in the Supreme Court of the U.S., and they ruled against us, you see. They're trying to muzzle us. They're trying to stop us from being successful in making this Christian world Krishna conscious. But we're going to be like Nelson Mandela. We're not giving up our determination. No matter what they do, our determination is always there. Somehow, we have to convince these people that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead and we're all His eternal servants. So any other questions? Yes.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, at the beginning stages of Krishna consciousness, you are excited. It's all just bliss and it's your first experience of such bliss. And all you want to do is give it out, you know, to everybody and start preaching immediately, whatever little you know, you want to give it to everybody. And then you realize what you're in for, that it is bliss, but it's also purification, and it's also a process of getting rid of your conditioning. So then,
a process of what?
Getting rid of your conditioning. So a process.
Yeah, conditioning, okay.
So then you decide, well, some devotees like myself, well, let me move into a temple or let me take this seriously and develop my sadhana and then maybe I might have purity and the force to preach. But the danger is you get stuck in a rut of procrastination. Let me develop my sadhana first. Let me get my 16 rounds in order first. And then you just sit there and then you think, then maybe I'll start book distribution. Then maybe I'll have that purity.
Yeah.
My question is, how do you get out of that procrastination and realize that while developing the sadhana, you also still have to preach? You may not be perfect at your 16th
yeah.
and your 4th, but you still have to go out there.
The first thing, Maharaji, is that one has to realize is this procrastination is influence of the mode of ignorance. That's the first thing. When I joined, I remember we were just, you know, every day the whole temple, Vishnu Swami would take out, we'd all go out and preach together every day. The temple was emptied out. There was nobody left of the temple. And I was a brand new devotee. Actually, they sent me to appear on a live TV show by myself. I was immediately put into preaching. The first day I joined, and we were immediately out there on the campus. We go out all day on the campus, you know, preach. Immediately preaching. And I wanted more time to develop myself internally. I mean, I had to beg with the devotees. I had to just beg with them. Finally, I pleaded with them. I want to read the Nectar Devotion. I mean, the Easy Journey to Other Planets. I want to read it. I haven't had time to read it. Can I stay back from Sankirtan for one day to read it? And they said, okay. But don't sleep. And I made sure I didn't sleep. I read the whole Easy Journey to Other Planets. Well, one day I stayed back and read Easy Journey to Other Planets, cover to cover. I was sitting there waiting for him, and I had the book. I showed him, yeah, I read the whole thing, and I didn't sleep. So actually, but it's an interesting point you've raised, because when should I preach? Well, I think I'll wait till I'm Krishna conscious, and then I'll preach. Well, you probably never end up preaching if you think like that. Because secret is this. The more you give Krishna, the more you get Krishna. You're next in the queue. The more you give Krishna, the more you get Krishna. So the secret of success is this. Whatever you've realized about Krishna, you share that. It's like Shyamasundari Malati's little daughter, Sarasvati. She's a little girl in Vrindavan. She would tell some adult, a little tiny baby girl, she would say, "Do you know who's Krishna?" And they would say, "No, you tell me." "He's the Supreme Personality of Godhead." Prabhupada said, if you simply tell people Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then you are a first-class preacher, you see. You don't need to memorize, have any verses memorized yet. You don't need to, just whatever you've realized about Krishna, you share that, you see. And then when Krishna sees this devotee is so sincere, whatever he is real or she has realized about me, he or she is sharing it. Now I will give this devotee more realization. And then when you share that more realization, then Krishna will give you more realization. I know I felt this dichotomy myself, because the most wonderful thing happened in the early days of ISKCON. See, in the beginning, Prabhupada was there and we were in other temples. Prabhupada didn't come to our temple. And there was no tape ministry, you can't even hear the lectures. I mean, it was pretty austere. There's only a few books, wasn't so many books printed yet. But then the most wonderful thing happened. They started the Bhaktivedanta tape ministry. And you could get a subscription, and every week you would get a whole packet of the cassettes of the latest lectures. Oh, and that was really something. But then there's no time to listen to them. You have to go out and preach, Prabhu. I can't listen to the tapes. I mean, it's the same thing, you know. So I didn't know, what am I supposed to do? I want to hear these tapes, but I'm supposed to go out and preach. So then I realized something. You know, every day we take lunch. It takes quite a while to take lunch. And so I just eat a big breakfast, and I would skip lunch every day. Well, all the devotees in the Prasadam room, I was there in the Brahmacharya Ashram, listening to those tapes and taking notes. And I have notebook after notebook filled up with those notes I took from those tapes. I still keep them. I kept them. A whole stack of notebooks, composition books, filled up page after page after page of notes from those tapes. So I went deep, deep, deep into studying these things. And then then after lunch, we would go out and preach on the campus. And I'd have all the arguments from the students. When we would just sit at Prashad, the students would come up and ask questions. And I had all the answers from Prabhupada. I just heard the tapes an hour ago, how Prabhupada was defeating the material scientists on Venice Beach. And these students would come up with their atheistic arguments, and I could just repeat what I'd heard from Prabhupada. And it was really powerful and effective. So you really do need to do your own study. It's very important. You should preach and at the same time study, hear Prabhupada's tapes, hear his conversations. You know, you need to do both things. If you just preach and you don't cultivate your own knowledge, it'll be difficult to preach properly. And if you just cultivate knowledge and don't preach, that's another story. I wrote Prabhupada about it one time. I said, "Prabhupada, I don't have enough time to read." Actually, I wrote him a letter like that, complaining. Please, can I have more time to read? I was like asking him like that, you know. And he said, "There's much time in the day for studying." He really didn't buy into my argument. I didn't have enough time. He said, "There's much time in the day for studying." He said, "But study without practice will become dry and useless." So I simply think, well, I'm just going to do my own study, my own cultivation. I don't want to share it with anybody yet. If you don't have the mood of sharing it, if you don't care enough to share it with anybody, your own taste for Krishna consciousness will dry up. You're called a kanishta adhikari, and you won't get a taste. But if you have that desire to cultivate your own knowledge, your own deep meditation, your own personal realizations, so that you can share it with people and help people out of their suffering, then you have a very good combination, which will make you very successful in your own sadhana and in your own preaching. Yes?
Does everybody... ISKCON is the movement, preaching movement. Whatever you do is preaching. Not that everybody.
That's a fact. Now, later on, my service changed. I was really enlivened in the campus preaching. In fact, they even had me do all the campus lectures. I would go talk and give lectures in the classrooms. When the classes came to the temple, they had me give. I was doing all this stuff. It was really enlivening. And then they sent me to. They said, "Okay, now, Sankarshan Das, we'd like to send you over to the Houston Temple to make you the vice president." They said, "Oh wow, I'm moving up the ladder, you know, vice president." And I got there. The cook said, "Krishnamurti Prabhu," he said, "Sankarshan Prabhu, come here. I'd like to show you something." He took me into the kitchen. He said, "Here's your spoons. Here's your spices. Here's your pots. Haribol Prabhu, you're the head cook. I'm going to Miami." So I went there to be the vice president. I found out now I'm the cook. And I had no time to go out and preach. Absolutely zero time. Our GVC man came, Balavanti, said, cooking for the preachers, that is also preaching. You're feeding the preachers, that's as good as preaching. So that I, even though I love being out there preaching, now I had a whole year where I didn't have time to walk out the door. It was so intense because the whole temple went out of book distribution and they left me back there to run the whole temple by myself. I had to cook every offering. I had to make the deity sweets. I had to offer the offerings. I had to do all the artis. I had to answer the phone, answer the door. Every single service of the whole temple was on my shoulders. I mean, if I had to answer nature's call, I was like, how do you even squeeze it in? I mean, it was very, very difficult. And, I mean, I'm being serious. It was very intense, but because I was helped, even though I was just cooking and offering artis, you see, because I was facilitating that every other devotee could be out there on book distribution, I got tons of mercy. Tons of mercy. And Prabhupada quoted one time a saying from Indian Railways. They had one time had a poster for their employees. It said, "Every employee should see that the wheel on the train is turning." So in ISKCON, some devotees will be doing arti. Some devotees will be raising families, you see. Some devotees will be pursuing careers so they can, you know, give Lakshmi to support the movement. And you know, everybody should play a role according to their nature and the guidance of their authorities, their spiritual master, their temple president. Everyone should try to play a role in this movement's success, whether you're sewing outfits for the deities, whether you're taking care of Tulsi Devi. We are working together as a team to make this movement successful. So whether you're out on the front line or whether you're in a support position, it doesn't matter. Everybody should be, if you're in the mood of what can I do to help this movement to be successful, then you're part of the preaching. You're part of the preaching. And if you just clean the toilet in the temple and the toilet cleaner, you're helping the preaching. You see. So in this way, you have to understand that preaching means more than just being out there. It means making the temple beautiful, keeping the lawn, everything perfect, clean and neat. You see? Everything, first class. So when somebody walks in here, they go, "Wow, this is an amazing place. This is awesome place." You see? Yeah.
I was just thinking that it's not only assisting the preaching, they are the preachers. Because by their example, Acharya...
That's also a fact. Yeah. That's also a fact.
It's preaching not only verbally, but by actions. One is preaching.
That is also preaching. Then. That's right. Yeah.
Maharaj, I was asking because what happened to me is I was trying to preach to somebody and they asked me a question I could not answer. And because I couldn't, they lost me.
What was the question you were asked?
They were asking...
Where were you preaching?
Oh, it was just on the street. I was okay. New at that time.
So what did they ask you?
I was told, "Go out there and don't waste any time." So I was like, okay. And I couldn't answer the question. And so I felt, okay, that's it. I'm going to go study. You know, I can't always stutter and not know what to say to these people. So I gave that up for some time and I did the studying thing. But I guess the problem is I never went back to preach again. So that's why I was asking the question and you answered it so well for me that now I understand that the two work simultaneously. I'm studying, but I must also preach, because I ran away from the preaching because I couldn't answer questions.
The thing is, my experience was that it would happen to me too. You get a question you can't answer, but that to me was an exciting thing. Now I'm going back to the laboratory to find, you know, cook up an answer for that one. It's like it's like a warrior on the battlefield. You know, he got attacked by a certain way, he couldn't defend himself, but he's going back now into training so he can hit the battlefield tomorrow and handle that one. To me, that's what I did. You see. I would take every defeat, as Prabhupada said, especially in spiritual life, failure is a pillar of success. So any time I would be defeated by someone, I couldn't answer it. You know, then I would study and I'd find out. I would read. I would find out the answer. So over 41 years now. You know, and now I'm doing this e-course thing. Every day, people are writing me so many questions, and I do. I study. I look carefully. It's amazing, exciting thing. I never gave up being educated. I'm still feel like I am still a student trying to learn what is the science of Krishna consciousness. As soon as you give up being a student, then you can't be a teacher. The only person who can really be a teacher is that person who's always a student, you see. So you should always be a student, always be learning, and whatever you've realized, share it. And you'll feel so good. There's no ecstasy greater than sharing Krishna consciousness. I do it for the nectar. I mean, I'm greedy for nectar. So that's why I'm traveling and preaching all over the world, because I have a comfortable ashram in Texas. I could just sit there and, you know, sit out in the front yard, play a guitar if I wanted to, you know. But I find it much more exciting to be out preaching all over the world. To me, there's no greater adventure than heading out on another preaching tour, you know. I travel in a dhoti with a shaved head and tila everywhere, to me, there's no greater adventure than preaching Krishna consciousness. Yeah.
But if you're just if one is dedicated to Krishna, no. Even somebody is debating with you, Krishna is within, as a Chaitya Guru, he can give all the answers. Not that we have to become jnanis.
That's right. Actually, one of my godbrothers, Naranta Prabhu, he was an old Beatles fan. He took all the Beatles songs and he redid them with Krishna conscious lyrics. And he was really some nice lyrics to the old Beatles tunes. But he had one called On Sankirtan. I forget which Beatles song it was, but it was a melody of. But he was saying, if you just go out, and preach, then he said, Krishna will give you the words to say. And that's a fact. If you have sufficient faith, that's a very good point. Even if you're not, I didn't mention that. A lot of what I learned was not by going and studying after not being defeated. That was only part of the picture. I left this out, and I'm glad you brought that point. What I found was when you put yourself out on a limb for Lord Chaitanya, he will cover for you. You will get realizations within the heart how to defeat the arguments. And for me, that was some of the greatest learning experiences I ever had, was just going out there and being confronted with something, and the words would just come from Krishna. And I would go, wow, that was amazing. What I just said was amazing. It just came. It wasn't my own intelligence. It was coming from a higher source. And a lot of my learning of Krishna consciousness philosophy was answers that came to me when I was stuck and Krishna helped me out. That's another thing. So if you have faith, then, what is that shloka? Yashadeve para bhaktir tatavete tataguru tasyaite katitahirata prakashante mahatmanaha. Unto those souls who have unflinching, implicit faith in the words of their spiritual master, and the words of Krishna, all the imports of Vedic knowledge become revealed. So you can have transcendental realization standing out on the street corner because of your faith in the words of your spiritual master and in the words of Krishna. Boom, there it is, the Vedic vision. It's bestowed upon you causelessly by the mercy of Guru and Krishna. That's another point. So we're getting a little bit over time. In fact, probably way over time. But so go ahead and stop here. I really want to thank you all very much for your participation in this movement. You're all great souls, actually, for being here in Prabhupada's movement. Thank you very much. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Jai.